there. My name is Christine Au, and I'm the Western and Midwestern Region Campus Fellow from the United Nations Association USA. Thank you for tuning in to the Global Advocates Podcast, a series created by the Campus Fellows, where we speak with organizations and activists working towards achieving one or a few of the Sustainable Development Goals. Today, for episode 4, we're joined by Luke Romick, the Director of Marketing and Partnerships for the Thirst Project, a Southern California-based youth-driven nonprofit working to address the global water crisis. This is an issue that I am personally very passionate about, so I'm very excited to speak with Luke to learn more about the organization and his journey as an advocate for clean water. Thank you so much for joining us today, Luke.
Thank you so much for having me, Christine. I'm excited to be here with you today, share a little bit about my journey as well as everything that Thirst Project's up to in the world. So thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Well, welcome, welcome. So first off, could you quickly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like you said, my name is Luke Romick, and I'm the Marketing and Partnerships Director at Thirst Project. We'll get into it a little later, but I also work with another organization called Legacy Youth Leadership, where I essentially handle the same responsibilities of marketing and then assisting with partnerships rather than leading that group. And I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio, so made my way to Los Angeles quite a few years ago to work for the company, and have been able to work at every level from kind of student and volunteer all the way to now head of marketing and partnerships. So quite an interesting journey I've had.
That's very exciting. And I'm excited to learn more about how you got to where you are at. So to start on the questions I have here, could you maybe start us off by telling me more about Thirst Project as an organization? What do you guys do for the global communities who are experiencing this intense water scarcity?
Yeah, simply put, Thirst Project exists to end the global water crisis. And what that means is still today in 2022, we have over 780 million people on our planet who do not have access to basic, safe, clean drinking water. And so what we do is raise money and awareness across the United States and other parts of the world to encourage people to take action. And then 100% of those funds that are raised go to actually building clean water projects in 4 different developing areas right now. And so we've been around for about 13 years, and we've been able to give over 500,000 people in 13 different countries safe, clean water for life.
Awesome. Like I mentioned, this is an issue I care deeply about. And when I first encountered Thirst Project and I saw what you guys are doing, I was very touched, honestly. I was like, oh my gosh, an organization so close to where I currently live is making such an impact. And I did not realize that you guys have been around for 13 years and everything you guys have achieved. It's amazing. And yeah, I understand that you guys currently have active projects in Uganda, El Salvador, and Kenya. But also on your website, you state that Thirst Project has a special relationship with the Kingdom of Eswatini. Could you tell me more about this commitment, how it came to be, and why Eswatini in particular?
Yeah, so we, about a decade ago, committed to give the entire nation of Eswatini, or Kingdom of Eswatini, rather, access to safe, clean water. And the reason we did that was a few different points that we'd like to consider is, one, it's a very small country. So in case you don't know, it's a very small landlocked country with around 1.2 million people in it just outside of South Africa. Additionally, Eswatini is unfortunately best known on the world stage for having the highest density of HIV/AIDS in the world. So 1 in 4 people still today in the Kingdom of Eswatini unfortunately have HIV/AIDS. And without access to clean water, that dirty water will typically kill you quicker than any HIV or AIDS treatment will, because you lack the actual access to that clean water that the medication relies on to be effective. And so we committed to give, like I said, that entire nation access to clean water, and we've got about 22% of the nation left to go. So we do, and sorry for so many numbers, but we do about 80% of our work every single year. So all of the projects, about 80% of them are directed towards the Kingdom of Eswatini, so that we can really work hard towards accomplishing that goal and making as big of an impact in one single area that we can use as a case study to gain funding and support for across the world.
That is fascinating. I think you touch on an aspect of why it is so important to resolve the clean water crisis. The very intimate connection it has with other development indicators and other things about health and well-being, which, I mean, when we talk about the sustainable development goals, that's exactly what we're interested in, how all of these factors are interconnected. And I think it's very amazing that y'all kind of only have a little bit of the country left to provide this clean water to. And I'm sure that all of your partners there have felt the impact of this project. And I'm definitely excited to see you guys really make this into a successful case study. I personally, in my time, I've tried to really advocate for that idea that if you provide clean water, development will come, people's lives will get so much better. And I'm definitely going to keep an eye on what Thirst Project is doing. And hopefully you guys can appear as a case study in some of my work in the future. But yeah, on your website, you guys also describe yourself as the world's largest youth water org. What does that mean? And how are young people a part of your work and impact?
Yeah, so that's actually how I got involved. Is Thirst Project's origin started at telling students across the world about the global water crisis. So at the time, our founder and CEO was a college student here in Los Angeles. He was 18 years old, and his best friend had kind of told him about the water crisis. At that time, 1.2 billion people on our planet did not have access to safe, clean drinking water. And so his world was kind of shocked. He was in LA, so he gathered his closest friends, went to what we call Ralph's at your local grocery store to buy as many waters as he possibly could. And they set out to Hollywood Boulevard to tell people, hey, did you know? At that time, like I said, over a billion people do not have access to safe, clean drinking water. So they raised a couple $1,000s, gave it to a local charity, but two people they had met on the street that day were like, hey, love what you guys do. I teach a class in Orange County. Can you come speak to my students? And so they spoke to two different high school groups in the OC and didn't think too much of it. They called themselves the Thirst Project Club. They were just a group of guys. And then about 2.5 months later, checks showed up in the mail made out to the Thirst Project for $12,000 each to be able to fund our first projects. And we didn't even have a bank account to be able to cash those checks. And so that's when we really realized the untapped potential in encouraging and activating young people around an issue like the global water crisis. And so that turned into, at its peak, a school tour that would travel to around 200 different campuses, 300 different campuses every single year, speaking to around 125, 130,000 students every single year as well. And so obviously, a lot of that has been retooled over the course of COVID and everything else relative to the pandemic and a new virtual reality. But still today, what we mean when we say we're the world's largest youth water organization is that no other youth water or water organization has the support of as many young people as we have. So we've been able to work with over 3 million students in our 13-year history, whether through speaking to them at presentations or fundraising events or even just kind of different activations that students are leading in their own community for Thirst Project. So that's something that we're really proud of and think, again, outside of that 100% model is one of the other main things that makes us really unique in this already amazing space of water charities that are already doing great work.
That's remarkable. And I think it's especially apt that Thirst Project kind of had its start in SoCal, in LA, a city that also has a big water problem. So it seems almost perfect. And yeah, like all of these things lined up so well for you guys and y'all have had so much success as a result. But I guess it makes me curious, why do you think it is especially important to involve young people in efforts to solve massive global problems like the water crisis, especially because this crisis is often a result of institutional failures? Some might say that the youth, especially those who are still in school, which happens to also be many of the young people that Thirst Project targets and engages, they lack the so-called knowledge and skills to overcome what seems to be such an insurmountable obstacle. So why is it important to involve them in this discourse, in this conversation, in this effort to find a solution?
Yeah, I think my answer for this would be twofold. And one is that kind of first point that you just referenced is the commonly held belief is that young people don't have enough knowledge, enough skill, enough money to really affect change on an issue such as the global water crisis. But in reality, we know that as little as 50 cents repeatedly makes a mountain of money over time. And that if you just start, you will eventually finish. But if you don't start at all, you're just delaying the inevitable of eventually having to work your way through it, learn how to ask somebody for money, learn how to engage your community and get people on your side and galvanize support. All of those things that go with a lot of the programs that we develop for young people that, let's say another company might have been like a more dare kind of approach, suit and tie, like, here's what you need to do. Here's the problem in the world. And here's the only way you can fix it. It's more, we really want to encourage young people, like, what are you good at? Use that to help end the global water crisis. So for some people, it's speaking. Some people, it's donating. Some people, it's hosting events. It's different for everybody, but we really like to have young people find what they're passionate about and good at and help use those for good. So that's one part of it, is that we really want to encourage young people that you have everything that it takes right now, because that's the hardest thing, I think, to get over. And then secondly, with it being, like you said, such a massive issue, the chances of us solving this crisis collectively as a world within the lifetime of a single generation is a little difficult. Now, obviously, we hope that we will be able to end the entire water crisis within 20 to 40 years in a reasonable sense. But at the same time, there's going to be two other generations that grow up with this reality that we're going to have to face. And so the sooner you can involve people in these types of issues and help people understand them, the more likely we are to prevent them and attack them with every generation moving forward, rather than what we kind of grew up with, where it's like, here's the world your parents created for you or your grands created for you. It's like, that's fine, but now we're going to collectively kind of take it back and work together so that every generation has the same type of emphasis on global health, global economy, global support, all of those different things that require our attention right now, in my opinion, because there's just so many different humanitarian issues. And if we just waited to be adults to fix them, we'd be in the same spot that we're at right now.
That is quite true. And I definitely agree with everything that you said, just as a young person myself that has also faced a lot of kind of skepticism in my journey of trying to become a more proactive global citizen. Like, there's always been a lot of pushback, like, and also just a lot of kind of jadedness among even my peers. It's like, what can we do? Like, we're so small, we know so little, what are we to kind of comment on these things and like make these efforts? But I think you touch on a very big idea that it's never too young to start getting aware of the world that you live in. And especially in today's society, where it's extremely globalized, where so many systems and so many institutions are intimately connected, you can't really afford to be unaware or willfully ignorant of the world around you. And kind of like you said, like, this is a crisis that's going to go on for a while, and it's going to take multiple generations to solve. And I think that is a thinking that applies to a lot of other issues, especially like climate change. We need to be engaging young people now. And it's definitely a lot of food for thought. And I do hope that, like, through this, we're able to encourage any of our young listeners to be like, you're not too young to get started. It is the perfect time at whatever age for you to do what you can do within your means. And kind of pivoting, I mean, going off of that, I understand that right before the pandemic, kind of like you mentioned, Thirst Project founded sort of a spinoff organization called Legacy Youth Leadership that is really focused a lot on this youth empowerment aspect of your work. Could you tell me more about what this organization aims to achieve in terms of harnessing the passions and interests of young people who want to make a difference in the world?
Yeah, so funny enough, this organization actually lied in the shadows for quite some time since 2016. So it was really developed, the secondary organization, as a support system for Thirst Project. So that's where it originally came from. And then as we got near the pandemic, it was even before the pandemic started that we were having these conversations, that we realized that we were really having two different distinct missions. One was, yes, ending the global water crisis, but the other was inspiring and activating young people to take action. And so it was specifically for the global water crisis, but we thought, what if we could white label these programs? And white label, for those who are listening, means to essentially make it as blank as possible and applicable to any different thing. So you're just taking the bare bones or the structure of it and applying it to any single cause. And so once we kind of realized that, we decided, yes, let's take this kind of support organization, brand it completely different, separate it so that they're two specific partner organizations rather than a spinoff or development of. It's really, it was born out of and to be able to scale specifically those student programs and allow anyone to access our programs, because a lot of our programs for Thirst Project specifically were only targeting people that we knew we were going to fundraise a decent amount. And so these LYL programs have a prioritization of Title IX schools and providing access to underserved communities to take these programs and learn anything. So we have six different programs right now. We'll pick back up the seventh, but with travel, we're not doing any trips abroad into the field or anything like that. But we have a leadership program and a speaker program where part of or half of the experience is online, and you take a series of courses with video instruction and different assignments. And then a half of that experience is also in person right now via Zoom sessions, or we've had hybrid kind of in-person event experiences as well. We also help students form their own clubs to just learn how to develop a club, the toolkit, the resources necessary, goal setting, strategic planning, all of those things. We have scholarships available, so students who take action with us become eligible for scholarships and then also become eligible to go to our Legacy Summit. So that is our student leadership conference every summer. That was born out of, we had so many different students in so many different areas across the United States and then different parts of the world who were doing amazing work, but never got to meet each other or interact about how they're doing things differently. And so that experience is a two-day in-person event here in Los Angeles, California. We love bringing together our students, keynote speakers, performances, presentations, all the things in one to make it a really exciting kind of, in your boat, one part UN, one part kind of music festival in that sense of a really exciting experience for our young people. The organization is called Legacy Youth Leadership, and that is our goal, to be able to encourage and inspire young people to take action on any issue they care about. We're currently active with three partners as Legacy Youth Leadership. We work with the Rainforest Trust to address climate change. We work with She's the First to address gender equality. And then we work with Thirst Project, obviously, to address the water crisis. And so those are our three key areas that students we've worked with have said, these are the causes we care about the most, far and wide above. We'll probably bring in or introduce new causes in the future around homelessness and racial justice and a few other issues. But we really wanted to start small, similar to that Eswatini case study approach. We really want to make a specific impact that we can scale meaningfully rather than just getting as far and wide as possible and making quite a shallow effort.
I think that's so cool. Like, I mean, something that was originally part of your model, you guys have since expanded it and honestly increased your impact. I'm sure COVID probably kind of threw a wrench into some of those plans, but at the same time, I'm sure that the ability to kind of connect people through Zoom has also helped expand your reach like that much more. And just speaking as a young person that was looking for opportunities during COVID, I definitely have to say that I'm sure that a lot of these students that you engaged were very appreciative of the chance to learn more about how to enhance their skills and also, I guess, like adapt it to an ever-changing environment. Like, we never know when the next pandemic is going to happen, so we must always be ready to be able to employ our online tools again. And yeah, it's, I do kind of think it's a pity that I've kind of grown out, I guess, of your like outreach age range. Like, I'm not a high school student anymore, but I do hope that if anyone has the privilege of being able to experience training under your team or learn from any of your programs, they'll gain so much. I mean, 3 million students, that's not a small thing. And I'm sure that number is only going to keep growing. So at this point, I would like to make a slight pivot away from these remarkable organizations you work for and delve a little bit into your personal story. Could you maybe share a little bit about how you got involved with Thirst Project? Were you always interested in the global water crisis?
Yeah, so I'll say before I met Thirst Project, the one thing that kind of got me prepped to meet Thirst Project to make it kind of a perfect moment, if you will, was my junior year of high school. I had signed up for an AP Environmental Studies class. And that was obviously the semester before. So summer's rolling through and we get the huge summer assignment. And I'm like, I am absolutely not doing this. I'm going to drop the class. No way. I'm out. So I take that approach and show up day one and the teacher's just not having it. She was like, that's fine. You can drop the class, but you're going to have to go home and get your mom and dad to sign this sheet that says they're okay with it. And coming from a family of teachers, I knew that was almost game over for me because they were never going to sign that permission slip. So essentially the teacher allowed me to do my full summer project in like 48 hours, which I somehow pulled off, got a terrible grade on, but I was like, all right, I'm at least committed to being a part of this class. And I'm so glad that I did because it really struck almost every chord of environmental passion that I still carry with me today. I grew up loving animals, but I didn't know too much about like how the world works, if you will. So to learn at that time how big the global water crisis was, how deforestation and climate change were becoming an issue, and a number of different things, I was just really primed to care about something like this. And so then my senior year of high school, Seth, our founder and CEO, who was 24 at the time, so he's 3 years younger than I am today, spoke at my high school and just told me about the water crisis. I went through the whole kind of school tour presentation and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, but I'm doing that. So some small town kid in Ohio just really fell in love with it. And then my first year of college, I was going to college in a few weeks, so I didn't think too much of it. But I went to college and started an environmental club that I then asked Thirst Project to come speak to my club about on campus, and got about 40 people involved, raised a couple $1,000s, and then really took to the internship train. So everyone knows how important internships get once you get to college. But as you'll also find out in applying, a lot of internships want 5 years experience and no pay. It's a hard thing to find, especially starting out as a freshman or a first year. And I just took to Twitter and just kept bothering Seth, our founder. I was like, hey, you need a worker. You need someone to do this. You need that. And then eventually was like, leave me alone. If you can come to LA, I'll put you to work, but I don't have any money. And I was like, I think that's an offer. So I got my university to give me a research grant to do research on the effect clean water has on HIV/AIDS, which I essentially just used as my living stipend to move to LA. So I cleared out my bank account, moved out to LA with that stipend in addition, and just figured it out as an intern. So by the end of the summer, I'd fallen in love with it. I was probably doing 40, 50 hours a week just interning as like a part-time staff member, and then was like, hey, I can't afford to do that again, but if you can give me the amount of money I spent this summer, next summer, I'll come back and do the same thing. So I'm not making any money, but I'm also not going broke, just bleeding heart, caring about a cause. And so, that was really the start of it. And then each year, my responsibilities got greater. And then upon graduation in 2016, there was an opening in fundraising, which I took and raised a grand total of $5,000 throughout the whole year, which is a lot to some people. But when your job is to fundraise and you're getting paid for it, that is a pretty rough effort for a whole 365 days. And then eventually moved my way into marketing, which is where my passion originally was, even though I lack the necessary like traditional training. I didn't get a marketing degree or anything like that. So that's where I've been. And then I've recently really jumped into partnerships because I think one of the greatest experiences COVID has brought me is how valuable partnership can be. When one person's struggling, even when the entire world is struggling, there are still a few winners and losers in the grand scheme of everything. And the more you can align with people who are doing amazing work, it takes so much less effort from you and it makes so much more impact. And so partnerships are probably the favorite part of my job, is where you get to take brand X and person X and try and find why they should care about the clean water crisis and encourage them to work with us. So yeah, that's a little bit about my personal journey. And when I was in school, I was the class clown. In college, I was the extracurricular kid. So I did like every single thing in college. I played two sports. I was a double major. led the campus on that. I was the president of student athletes. So I kind of just went all over the place and then used all of those kind of positions to really help increase the amount of support and effort Thirst Project was getting during my time on campus.
That is such an interesting life story. I mean, I think that's so cool. It's you're really, I guess, what Thirst Project wants to try and achieve in young people. It's like inspire them from a young age, hopefully engage them in their work. And then, I mean, you've gone on to work for the Thirst Project and now you're a pivotal part of their team. I'm sure Seth at the time was surprised at your enthusiasm and at the same time, very grateful. Cause I mean, I'm sure even though those $5,000 isn't a lot for fundraising, I'm sure he was appreciative nonetheless. But wow, like you, I'm actually feeling kind of like very inspired by what you've done, like just kind of throwing everything at things that you care about, things that you're passionate about, and figuring things out from there. I think for young people who want to work in the nonprofit world or want to start becoming an advocate, that's like the very intimidating thing. The path ahead is very foggy. It's very hard to see where you're going. And especially with today's economy, it's very difficult to live with that kind of uncertainty. So it's very nice for me to hear that despite all of that, not only have you like persevered through it, I would argue that you've also been very successful in achieving what you want to do. And I'm sure you will achieve so much more in the coming years, both as an individual and also with Thirst Project and Legacy Youth Leadership. But I'm also kind of curious, what would you say are some challenges you've experienced working with Thirst Project, both as an unpaid intern to even now as a director for marketing? And subsequently, how have you then overcome these challenges?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and anyone in nonprofit will probably say this, and I think anyone in business probably says this, but it's always the budget. People always want 10x of what you got, and they need to make 10 times the impact that dollar should in traditional sense. So I think one of the things that we struggle with and every nonprofit struggles with is just an uncertain budget. It's not that we ever lack or have a very small one, but it shifts very frequently or temperamentally, as does the economy and other things. And so for COVID example, we've had donors committing lots of money that no longer could be committed or pledged, or student fundraisers that were happening that were canceled or postponed. And so there's just a lot of times where you have to really read and accept the reality of what's going on and make sure that you're making smart, sound decisions within that kind of space. And so one of our biggest priorities at Thirst Project and Legacy Youth Leadership has been retaining our staff. Similarly to my journey, a lot of people, probably 30% or 40% of our staff, has had some interaction with our organization prior to being a full-time staff member. So Haley was a road warrior, and what that was they would speak at high schools. That was replacing Seth, so Seth didn't have to travel all across the world. So Haley was a road warrior, and Kristen DeGuzman, who is on our development and fundraising team, she was a student leader in Las Vegas. And so you'll see that it's just budget. You can make up for it when you get people that really care and you are able to find a passionate group of individuals. And sometimes you're not going to be able to afford them, but you can always ask gratefully of people to give of themselves. So yes, I might not be able to hire my friend here in Los Angeles at his actual rate to shoot a video for us, but I can say, hey, can you give of yourself one time this year to shoot a video for me and be able to produce this really meaningful piece of content and help them feel a part of the mission that I'm on of ending the global water crisis, to be able to give of themselves in that way? And so I think to address that budget issue, the biggest thing that we do is developing a volunteer network of any kind. And that takes different shapes. So not just the traditional sense of like, we're going to go do a beach cleanup, but essentially like, hey, can you help me find 10 to 20 parents in your local community that would be interested in helping guide their students through this process? Or, hey, do you know any other people that you've worked with at your actual job that would be interested in supporting a cause like this or something along those lines? So I would say that's the biggest challenge. And then right now, the newest challenge we're facing is just the workforce. Everyone is quitting their jobs, wants the best job in the world. And then also in that hiring process, like, there are so many people hiring that it's just a crapshoot right now in terms of finding the right person for the right role on the team, because there are just so many people and so many other roles that we're competing against, kind of two different problems there of trying to get the right people on the ship. But always a good challenge. And I think above all, similar to that volunteer network, having a passion and caring about what you're doing makes it that much easier. When I wake up on Monday looking at the slate of issues that are to come as opportunities rather than problems, your mindset and your appreciation of the work is a little bit calmer, easier, you're happier, you're not as stressed, because at the end of the day, we're just doing the best we can with the resources that we have. And I think it's important to note that, because I would always absorb the issues when I was younger, like 18 years old, I was like, oh, if I don't raise this much money, this is the amount of people that are not going to have clean water, or that this issue is going to happen. And that's just such a, it's not a appropriate way to think, because it just drives you crazy, and then you're not a healthy worker at that point. So yeah, I would say those are the two biggest challenges for sure.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I love how you say that you'll look at problems as opportunities. I think that's a very good positive mindset that more people should adopt, including myself. Yeah, and also I really love how you talk about, I think a lot of people don't appreciate this about the nonprofit world, that in the spirit of it being nonprofit, a lot of what drives progress in this field is altruism, and altruism not only from donors, but also from the workers, kind of like what you say, like donating your time, donating your skills. Like, it's a hard ask, especially in this kind of economy, and especially for young people who are trying to find stability in some way or another. But I think both of us can agree that one can be very surprised at how far people are willing to contribute to a cause that they have been convinced is worth it. And I think everything that you mentioned definitely goes along with that. And I hope that you guys are able to retain your staff or find good people in the hiring process. If you want to hire me, I'm very available. anyway, pivoting from that, are there any role models you look up to in the clean water advocacy sphere?
Yeah, so I think it's hard because I've not really gotten to meet too many people in the water advocacy space. Like, I feel like if I was able to meet or interact with Scott Harrison, the founder of Charity Water, I know Seth, our founder, is very fond of him and they've got a great relationship, but I think he's someone that you can just look up to just based on the sheer impact that he's made. I mean, I think they've raised over $300 million or so, or maybe more to date, which is really just, we've made a dent in that comparatively. And so from that standpoint, it's really amazing to see. There's another guy that's not so well known. His name is Charlie Engel, and he helped co-found water.org way, way back in the day. And so he's an ultra marathon runner now. He's got one of probably the craziest stories of just living life and just dealing with everything that comes your way, and then eventually trying to make the most out of it. But he's someone that, in that sense, like as a person, I really look up to who he is, what he stands for. Every part of his journey he's unashamed of, and really looks to, similar to what I was talking about, where we see problems as opportunities. He really has that mindset to make anything a beneficial moment for him, and taking negative experiences, you turn them into lessons and kind of living and growing from there. And so those are two people I would definitely look up to. And then I'll be a little gushy is our team in Eswatini. We're not the ones here in the United States building any projects. Thankfully, we would be way too expensive, because we'd have to fly over there, live over there, all that kind of stuff. But additionally, we'd be getting in the way. And so we have local teams that are local to each country that are the nucleus of every project. So our country director in Eswatini, he's been with us for a decade now. His name is Sibusiso Shiba, and he is probably one of the greatest human beings I've ever met on planet Earth. He has the most infectious smile. I don't know if he's ever had a bad day in his entire life. And I think he's just, yeah, he is so passionate and believes everything that we believe in. And when I get stressed, I'm like, what are we going to do here? I'll shoot Sibu a text, and he's like, hello, brother, how are you? Greetings. And just the nicest guy in the world. And yeah, a brother of mine, I guess, at this point, because we've worked together and done so much together in life. But yeah, those are people I definitely look up to.
Awesome. I'm taking little notes in my head of to make sure that I pay attention to these people. And yeah, Charity Water, water.org, both huge water organizations who have also made a tremendous impact, I'm sure. I'm sure this project will eventually get to that point. I mean, you guys are growing at such a rapid rate and making such an impressive impact. So all the best with that. And kind of in line with that thought, from your perspective as a director of marketing and partnerships, how do you hope that Thirst Project and Legacy Youth Leadership will grow in the coming years? Are there any key milestones you hope to reach under your leadership?
Yeah, I think looking at some of those kind of key moments or things, obviously the campaign for Eswatini is a huge milestone for us, but until we get really one or two large players ready to roll, it's still kind of a moving target of, okay, when are we going to find that 20 to 25 million that we think it's going to take to knock that out? But it could also happen very rapidly. So still kind of grinding away at that. And then I would say in terms of our student impact, we really want to scale all of our student programs for Legacy Youth Leadership. So I think our goal is to be able to work with at least another 100,000 students because the size of our programs are really reduced. So we're only having about 100, 250 people go through one or two of those tracks each year. So definitely increase the amount of students in those different arenas. And then from a digital standpoint, we want to be able to maintain relevancy amongst the youth audience. So obviously the buzzword for Gen Z has been Gen Z for the last few years, and it's here and it's in it. But kind of looking ahead towards the next generation that will eventually replace that, and then also trying to own Gen Z as much as possible to grow up with them the way we did kind of the millennial generation. So we were able to, over the last 10, 13 years, grow up with those high school students and now see them as young adults and work with them as young professionals. And that's our goal, to continue to always do that. And so that takes aligning with brands that young people care about, that influencers or celebrities that young people are interested in, as well as being on some of those social forums or channels or anything where young people are at. And so that's definitely, no matter what, just continuing to maintain and own relevancy in these young spaces is always going to be a milestone or a tentpole goal for us. And then I'll throw out there personally, I want a 500K raised at our annual gala for the first time ever. We've gotten close. Right before COVID, we hit 419, I think, 419,000 just in that night. And so, yeah, my goal is to definitely have a half a million raised in one night and then continue to scale off the success there.
That's extremely exciting. And everything you said about maintaining relevancy, I'm sure that this project and Legacy Youth Leadership will be truly evergreen when it comes to conversations amongst young people. So I really hope all the best, and I hope you guys are able to achieve all these goals that you've mentioned. But finally, to wrap up the podcast, I ask this to everyone. I would like to ask, what is one piece of advice you would give to young people who want to start their advocacy journey, whether it's in the water space or not?
I kind of briefly said it, so I'll change the way I say it now is, and I think the most important step in changing the world is the first one. And that's kind of just the base way of saying that you have everything that you need right now to start making a difference. Like we said, we're not going to end the water crisis tomorrow, unfortunately. We might the next day, but at least tomorrow, it's not planned. It's not going to happen. And so any amount of effort, any amount of support, 50 cents gives one person 1 year of clean drinking water. $25 gives them clean water for life. So using those kind of bits of information and knowing how much more work we have to do, I think if you take nothing away from what we've talked about here today, all you need to remember is that you have everything it takes right now to start making a difference. And I can't say it enough, and I hope people it will surprise themselves once they start taking those kind of small steps. It's you're not going to start an NFL football game in your first practice, so why would you expect your charity work to be any different? I think we fall victim to a lot of viral moments, and also I call it velocitation of seeing young people like us experience hyper success and not realize how rare that is, because it's all that we see on the content that we consume or the conversations that we have and all of those different things. So yeah, don't be afraid to get started. Don't be afraid to fail, because we all will. Yeah, good luck.
Awesome advice. And I love that you threw in a little sports metaphor, a little sports like reference right there, because I know you love sports and you're a big sports person. All right. Thank you so much, Luke, for your time and your insight. I've learned a lot from everything you have shared, and I'm sure our listeners feel the same. So before we end off completely, are there any last things you would like our listeners to know?
I think we've covered really everything from the charity standpoint, my own personal journey, what I like to encourage people to understand or take away. And I think the last thing is really just letting people know where to find us. And so you can find us online at Thirst Project, everywhere for Thirst. And then Legacy Youth Leadership's a bit long. So any version of at Legacy Youth Leadership or Legacy Youth Lead on all social channels. And shoot us a DM, ask us a question. Beg us to come to your school. We'll give you a free presentation. We've got anything that you could want to start making a difference in your own community available today and for free. So take advantage of it while you can. And thank you so much for having me on this podcast, being able to share our journey, our organization's journey, and hopefully a little bit of where we're headed here in the future.
Of course, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.